To the Maya porch under Daya Mandir. And Sridhar Maharaj sat on the Vyasa San along with Srila Prabhupada. And Govinda Maharaj was sitting at their lotus feet. And he told to the whole assembly that he considers Govinda Maharaj his favorite son. So, a very nice, wonderful devotee. And I'd like to read something, because this is appearance day, we'll read something about Govinda Maharaj so you can all have some idea about him. That's a nice Vaishnava. Here's an article. Actually, it's a kind of like an autobiography that he gave, a description of his own life and coming to the lotus feet of Srila Sridhar Maharaj. He lost Sushin Prabhu again. He is having some trouble with his internet connection. So, bound by affection. Can we get Sushant Prabhu connected again? No. Sushant Prabhu? Sushant? Are you having trouble with your internet connection again? Yes. Some difficulty with his ISP. Internet service provider is not giving good service the past few days. Anyhow, bound by affection, His Divine Grace Srila Bhakti Sundar Govindadeva Goswami Maharaj reflects on the events that surrounded his first days as Sri Chaitanya Saraswat Mat at the lotus feet of his divine master, Srila Bhakti Rakakshadra Deva Goswami Maharaj. This talk was given 50 years after the event here at the Mutt. So Srila Govinda Maharaj is writing or speaking. And my birthplace was Brahmanpar, known in former times as Brahmanpar. As you have seen when you visited there recently, I studied at the village school and later went to school at Butsuri. Presently, my father sold the property at Brahmanpar and bought a new house in Rungpur. So we left this district to move there. My maternal uncle and his family lived in Rungpur. They were very wealthy and they invited my mother and father to settle there. At that time, the political tension was building up, the inevitable division between India and Pakistan, which eventually came in 1947. Then my father died in Rungpur and my family and I returned to my native Brahmanpar. Responsibility then came to me to support my family. In order to do so, it was necessary for me to receive training and learn some kind of profession. So I went to train in a small charitable dispensary, cum hospital. If it still exists, I do not know. Doctors and nurses were in very short supply there. There was only one doctor and one nurse in attendance, and then myself. At that time, it was unwritten law that if you took training from a doctor for between 5 and 10 years, you would be accepted as a doctor in your own right. So this purpose, I would go daily to two separate dispensaries, 2 kilometers apart from each other. In each place, I would open the dispensary, whereupon someone would come and clean and prepare everything for the 2 days' work. Oh, Bhakti Craig is there, if you'd like to add him. Krishna Prabhu. After the doctor came and was attending the patients, I would take that opportunity for reception, for recreation, and go to play football. This was my regular daily routine. Afterwards, sometimes I would go back to the hospital and sometimes back to the village of Nandagat, where I would stay at a big zamindar's house. He was a big landlord and consequently also very rich. He and his family liked me. It is my good fortune that everywhere people like me. Nandagat is situated 12 kilometers from Navadvip, about 15 kilometers from Brahmanpar. So then Sushin Prabhu is also asking to be joined.
I've connected him, Maharaji.
Got him?
I've connected him again. He went like
Yes,
on a
Maharaj,
long
I'm connected,
patch.
Maharaj.
Oh,
I'm having difficulty. Okay. And everyone has the page we're reading from. The link. So then, after the doctor came and was attending the patients, I would take that opportunity for recreation and play football and like that. And he was a big landlord. He and his family liked me. It is my good fortune that everyone liked me. And they got situated 12 kilometers from Nabdip and about 15 kilometers from Bamanpar. That picture, by the way, on the top there with the Mandunga is Govinda Maharaj at a very early age. I think he must have been about 17 or so. After playing football in the evenings, I would relax with my friends and eat some supper, which often included chana, fried curd, and saag, spinach. Then together we would go back to that big zamindar's house to read. In those days, I would read novels, and at night, I would often sleep in the reading room, drawn to the sadhus. One day, a group of sadhus came from this mutt, that means Chaitanya Saraswat mutt, four or five of them. I first saw them about 7:30 in the evening. They sang kirtans and then gave a discourse on Srimad Bhagavatam. I was drawn to them. One of the sadhus appeared to be especially exalted. He had a very saintly body. As he was giving a lecture about Srimad Bhagavatam, he reminded me of Srinivasan, lecturing in the assembly of King Veerapandiya.
Prabhu.
I have to mute the microphone or lower that. Okay, now it's better. Previously, I had read much Vaishnava literature and was familiar with the story of Raja Birambir. He was a dacoit chief prior to becoming a disciple of Srinivas Acharya. Have you ever heard of these events? Anyhow, that exalted sadhu appeared to be exactly like Srinivas Acharya giving his discourse. There were so many people there, maybe 100 listening to his lecture. Sitting amongst them were three or four zamindars who were known to me, all of them dacoits. Although they were dacoits, nonetheless, they were like grandfathers to me. I would constantly joke with them and tease them and sometimes even chastise them very much, and they liked me for it. Somehow they relished my chastisement. After hearing the very revolutionary lecture delivered beautifully by this brahmachari, I was very impressed. It was not like the usual lectures given by roaming Goswamis, and after hearing it, I was so attracted, so the next day I returned. I had played mridanga drums from a very early age, and I was well able to sing songs, so I had some capacity in this way. When I arrived, they were singing Vande Guroshi Charanaravindam, and I asked if I could join them and play the mridanga. They were surprised at my request, as I was just a village boy, but they gave the mridanga and I played. They were very impressed. At that time, I held the position of a professional singer, but that's another story. My father was a very famous professional singer of Vaishnava songs, kirtans, etc. He was very famous in that district and other districts also, and through him I inherited many songs. He died when I was 14 years old. Not everybody knew that my father, being a professional singer, leading a large sankirtan group, had to be paid in order to maintain it. He would ask 200 to 250 rupees, which was quite a lot at that time. My uncle's sadness. One day I saw my uncle sitting on a veranda crying. He was very strong and a stick fighter. Indeed, he was a famous stick fighter, so it was very unusual for him to be in such a state. After seeing this, I asked my uncle why he was crying. He then told me a call had just come from my father to sing at a particular function, but the caller did not know my father had already passed away. That it touched my uncle's heart and caused his sadness. My uncle said that the person would call back, but he had no one to sing in my father's place. I told my uncle that there was a solution and he could take the call. He seemed surprised. Who will sing these songs? He asked me. I told him, I can sing them. My uncle had never heard me sing before, and he asked me how I had come to know these songs, because at that time I was too young to hear the songs about the Madhurya Ras pastimes of Sri Sri Radha Krishna. My father would not permit me to sing such kirtans because my father thought me, at such a young age, to be unqualified. I was not even allowed to listen to songs of such high type. Nonetheless, I was very much attracted. So whenever my father would go to sing, I would follow him and hide in a nearby rice paddy field. I was able to hear him sing these songs. Sometimes it would take him a whole month to fulfill all the invitations in a particular village. I was very much addicted to the songs of Radha Krishna, and at that time my memory was very fresh, and I was able to memorize every song he sang. Also, every day my father would give lessons to some students. While I pretended to read a little distance away, instead of reading, I would listen to him teaching. In this way, I became qualified. I explained this to my uncle. Although he was very surprised, he called me to his house to sing a heavy song. I sang it fully, and he cried again and embraced me. He now knew that he would be able to take the phone call and tell them, yes, my brother is not here, but my brother's son will fulfill your opportunity. It was so far away from here, about 30 kilometers. This way, my first assignment as a professional singer began. After that, I traveled to so many villages and sang so many songs. This way, also, I was able to gain more experience and knowledge. My first association. After having seen and heard the sadhu singing, I was naturally attracted and joined with them. They were very pleased with me. They told some harikatha and asked me why I was playing football. Instead, you should come with us and we will talk with you. Until this time, I had not mixed with sadhus, but I felt strongly their affection and became very attached to them. In this way, I stopped playing football and instead began mixing with these devotees. This was the beginning of my association with the sadhus. They began to teach me that this body is nothing, the mind is nothing, the world is nothing, your father is nothing, mother is nothing, all is nothing. Only Krishna is reality, and everything else is material and temporary. One day you will die, and you must be prepared for this moment. When you take birth, death must follow. After death, what will you do? You do not know when death will come or where you will go. In the next life, your father and mother may be a dog and a bitch. You do not know who will become your next father and mother. They preach like that. As a young boy, I was very simple-hearted, so I believed everything the sadhus told me. They had such big influence on me. I jokingly asked them if they would take me with them. They said, yes, we will take you, but will you go with us? And I answered, yes. Having already promised the sadhu, yes, I shall go with you, I tried to avoid them so they would not take me. But they were very eager to take me. They immediately accepted what I told them. After my sudden yes and agreeing to go with them, I became very disturbed. I had not lied in my whole life. Sometimes I think that my only good quality was that I never lied. Whatever promise I made, I must keep. And I made a promise in front of the sadhus. What is that? And coming from a Vaishnava family, and having read many Vaishnava books, I was well aware of the story of Dityananda Prabhu. His father, on the strength of a promise, had given his son to Madhavendra Puri. I knew this story, but still I tried to find some way to avoid the promise I had made to the sadhus. I considered that if the sadhus would tell me it was not necessary to go with them, then I would get relief. But they did not say, no, it is not necessary to come with us. Instead, the sadhus were always washing my brain. Every day I would come to the sadhus and they would brainwash me more. I would turn to the dispensaries and the hospital, and then the hospital, and cry, thinking, how will I leave everything here? But I promised the sadhus so I must go with them. How can I avoid it? I considered in many ways, but again, when coming to the sadhus, I received more strength in the other direction. Yes, I must go. But each time I'm returning to the hospital, I tried to think how to manage this burden. I had many commitments. Plan for relief. Anyhow, finally I decided on a plan which would give me one last chance to avoid going with the sadhus. I considered that if I modified my promise and told the sadhus, yes, I shall go with you if you take me today, but not later, then they would not be able to take me because the next day they were holding a big festival in that village. This way I would be relieved of any commitment. I was expecting they would reply, tomorrow we shall take you. I would then say, no, tomorrow I cannot talk. Today I must talk. This is my plan. This way I was very simple and approached the sadhus with my statement. When I told them, their response was quite unexpected. They were very happy with my word and said, very good, this very night we will take you. So that night they stole me. It was 2 o'clock in the morning, and our journey began by having to cross the river Nandaga. At that time of night, there was no boat to cross the river, so being taken by the sadhus, I had waked the brahmachari. I had to swim the river with him. This was a disciple of Prabhupada, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, and he lived with Srila Guru Maharaj. Sridhar Maharaj. Srila Guru Maharaj, that means Sridhar Maharaj, had sent him and the other sadhus to preach there in Nandagarh. After some hours of walking, we arrived at the outskirts of Navadvip town and stopped. I asked that sadhu, Jayadvaita Prabhu, where is your ashram? And he showed me a simple building. At that time, there was only a small three-room building. I was a little disappointed. From my childhood, I had read the Mahabharata and Ramayana and descriptions of Vaishnavas, Vasishtha's ashram, Vishwamitra's ashram, and many others. I knew these descriptions, but this ashram did not appear like those. It was just a building, and I was a little disappointed. The brahmachari explained, it is a small building, but a big, big sadhu is living within that building. Seeing the building, I did not get hearty, happy feelings, but already I had come out from my village, and I could not go back. I committed myself, so I must stay. At that time, Srila Guru Maharaj, Srila Maharaj, was walking on the veranda, chanting upon his beads. Then Jayadvaita Brahmacharya Prabhu showed me, he is our guru, come. Then I went up to the veranda and Jayadvaita Prabhu gave full Dandavat pranams and told me to offer full Dandavats also. Then Srila Guru Maharaj asked, where did you find this boy? Jayadvaita Prabhu gave a little description and finally said, in this way this boy has joined your ashram today. Srila Maharaj said, ah, this is nice, intelligent boy, he thought. If I can prepare him, this boy can be a good weapon for our society. He asked me, can you stay in the ashram life? I was surprised and thought, why is this sadhu asking me, can you stay? I've come to stay, so it is already final. Then why is this sadhu asking me, can you stay or not? At that time, I had no idea, but I replied, yes, I can stay. Govinda Maharaj is always telling us that he is a yes man. Whenever anyone asks him, he always says yes. And I said, yes, I can stay. First fasting. That was on the Sringa Chaturdasi, a day of complete fasting. I had never fasted before. Ever since formally receiving the traditional Brahmin thread, I had followed Ekadasi and never took grains on that day, but I had never fasted. Instead, we would eat aloodham, plain potato sabji, and take some milk preparations on Ekadasi days. This way, we followed Ekadasi with very nice preparations, which had a different taste. But here I was being told that in the Sringa Chaturdasi, you will not be given anything at all to eat. At that time, I knew nothing about Nisringa Chaturdasi, and having walked since the middle of the night, I was very hungry. So I asked Jayadvaita Prabhu, oh Prabhu, I am very hungry. To which he replied, today is a day of full fasting. I asked, I cannot eat anything? He told me that I could eat some fruit, but where could I get some? I pointed out a papaya tree nearby. Jayadvaita Prabhu then said to me, yes, you can take one papaya, but you must give half to the deity, and the remainder you can eat yourself. That evening, after Nisringa Puja, they gave me so much aloodham, and the next day there was a very nice festival and much prasadam. Especially the paramana, sweet rice, was really tasty. After 2 days, the rest of the preaching party returned from Nandagat, and it seemed I had already many friends there by now. Srila Guru Maharaj had seen me, and it was my good fortune that he was very much attracted to me. He was searching for some boy who in the future could be like Guru. He had a formula. A particular boy would need to be a Brahmin, intelligent, etc., with that potential to be like the Guru. At that time, Srila Guru Maharaj was searching for someone to groom to continue his disciplic succession. When he saw me, he tested me. He called Srila Krishnadas, Babaji Maharaj, and others of his friends, and asked them to also test me. They each gave Srila Guru Maharaj a very good report about me. Amongst those was Srila Guru Maharaj's sister, Ramaditi, who was still residing here at the Mutt. This was spoken in 1998. Now she has passed away. She remembers everything. Ramaditi said to Guru Maharaj, yes, I think this boy is very good. Srila Guru Maharaj also asked Ramaditi, you see this boy? He will be good or bad in the future. Ramaditi said, the future I cannot say, but now he is looking good. In the beginning, I was a little bit suspicious as to whether I had done wrong or right. I was a young boy, and already I had made the step to leave home and join the mutt. But that was done really by emotion, not devotion. At first, I was very unhappy. But later, when I got the mercy of Srila Guru Maharaj, I became very happy. Anyhow, after about 1 month, we went to Srila Guru Maharaj to Mindapur district. Mindapur is where Sripad Jajavar Maharaj's mutt is. At that time, Srila Guru Maharaj came close to declaring that if he can train this boy, he will become a successor. And some friction came from our mutt's brahmacharis. Even with that brahmachari who read Bhagavatam to me and who previously liked me very much and took me with him many times. Hearing Srila Guru Maharaj's expression, everyone became very envious, and my fighting life started from that day. From Mindapur, we presently went to Puri with Srila Guru Maharaj for the Rath Yatra program. We had 15 days in hand, and Srila Guru Maharaj sent us to a district called Gunjam for preaching. After that preaching program, a particular brahmachari did not want to take me on to Puri for Rath Yatra. Srila Guru Maharaj was very angry. He sent a telegram to him to bring me immediately. Actually, we only arrived on the Rath Yatra day, and Srila Guru Maharaj chastised that brahmachari. He is a new boy and has not seen Rath Yatra before. Why did you not want to give him a chance to see Rath Yatra? This way he heavily chastised him. At that time, the rule of the mutt was such that a new man must stay at the mutt for a minimum of 6 months before being considered for initiation. Srila Guru Maharaj broke that rule and gave me initiation on that Rath Yatra day. He called for me, then told me, now I shall initiate you. There came some objection from the other side, not directly, but indirectly. But Srila Guru Maharaj did not care. He gave me first initiation on that occasion in Puri Dham. Srila Guru Maharaj told me, and you will chant attentively, and do not think about checking about the time. Active days in the mutt. The whole day I would be working. I was very restless by nature and always felt that I must always be doing something. Without work, I could not stay anywhere. So the whole day I would work. I felt that I would always needed to be doing something. Here at the mutt, if there was nothing to do, I would climb up the long bamboo flagpole. I would go up the flagpole, then come down, then go up again. I would do this in the afternoons while the others rested or slept. I would not rest at that time. On other occasions, I would climb a big mango tree. During the first year that I joined, there were so many mangoes, and I would eagerly climb the trees and eat them while sitting on the branches. Everyone complained about me, but I had no fear. I was a village boy, fearless. And still I am fearless. I always feel that Lord Shiva is with me, giving me protection. As a youth, I went into the forest where there were tigers, bears, and many other dangerous animals. But I had passed through those forests happily. When I was living in the villages, I always felt that I had Lord Shiva's protection like that. Still now, I always feel the protection of Lord Shiva, that he is always left looking after his own son. I was born by a boon from Lord Shiva. Because of this special opportunity, I'm a fearless person. Such is the beginning of my life history. This is a very interesting story about the relationship between Govinda Maharaj and Lord Shiva. That parents prayed to Lord Shiva to give them a son. And so he feels himself always to be the son of Lord Shiva. By his mercy, he was born. Srila Guru Maharaj's personal servitor. Srila Guru Maharaj took me and gave me his own personal seva. I did the personal seva of Guru Maharaj, and he constantly taught me many things. After about 6 months, a little less maybe, Srila Guru Maharaj arranged for me to study Sanskrit with a pundit who was living in the town of Navadvip, and I would go there every day. And suddenly one day I saw my uncle on the road. He recognized me, even though at that time I was a brahmachari in saffron cloth. He immediately recognized me. Oh, here you are. We have been searching for you in many places, but could not find you, and here you are in Navadvip. I said, yes, yes, I am here. I am living in the mutt. Please come to the mutt. Please, please come. I am here. But he asked me, where is your mutt? And I told the truth. That was my mistake. If I had told the lie then, they could not have traced me. But I told the truth. I am living in Sri Chaitanya Sarasapa. The next day, about 10:30 a.m., they came, 12 giants and my uncle, accompanied by some pundits also. They were staying in Navadweep at that time. When they came, I was putting up a fence in front of the mutt, and they took hold of me and tried to take me away by force, saying, "Oh, here is our boy." They were trying to take me, and I was shouting loudly, "Oh, they are taking me. They are taking me." Thankfully, at that time, one big koala milkman was there. I had much respect for Srila Guru Maharaj and used to serve him also. His name was Ashwini Ghosh. I appealed to him, "Ashwini, they are taking me from here." Ashwini came and tackled me. "Why are you taking this boy?" They responded, "This is our boy. Why we cannot take him?" Ashwini replied, "If this is the truth, you must first go to Maharaj and tell him. Then take your boy." They noted that the Gola was very strong and quite probably a dacoit. Many of the Golas here at that time were dacoits, especially in this area. There were many famous dacoit families and everyone knew it. So my uncle and his friends could not apply force, but had to go to Guru Maharaj and talk with him. Srila Guru Maharaj said, "If you can defeat me, then you can take your boy. But if you cannot defeat me, then you must leave your boy, all right?" They were perhaps three Vedanta pundits, and they were each thinking themselves to be great pundits. They thought, "Yes, it will be no problem," and agreed. They returned the next day and were easily defeated by Guru Maharaj. They again tried for two more days, but each time they were defeated, so they could not take me and had to give this news to my mother. And my mother came here, and in this way many things happened. This boy will be my successor. At that time at the mutt, four or five of the brahmacharis were very powerful. Three of them were particularly qualified and expected that one of them would be chosen to be the acharya of this mutt after Guru Maharaj. But when Srila Guru Maharaj declared that this boy will be my successor, they all began to fight with me. At that time, we had a branch in Calcutta at Srila Bhaktivedanta Swami Maharaj's house. Srila Swami Maharaj had given two rooms to Guru Maharaj for preaching. He was the only one who was able to inspire Srila Guru Maharaj to leave Navadweep and come to Calcutta. Arrangements were also made there with two pundits for me to study grammar, the Kavya, Vedanta, etc. Every day, Swami Maharaj would also directly teach me many things. Actually, Srila Guru Maharaj was my teacher, and his learning was beyond compare. They referred to Srila Prabhupada as Swami Maharaj, because his actual sannyas name of Srila Prabhupada was Bhaktivedanta Swami. In the tradition of the Vaishnava line, the sannyasis always have a name like Bhakti as at the beginning, then a middle part, which is in the case of Srila Prabhupada, Vedanta, so there's Bhaktivedanta, and then the third part, Swami. The third part of the name is only made up of 108 different names, just like Swami or Puri or Goswami, etc. So generally, when we refer to the sannyasi, we refer to them by third part of their name, and therefore they call them by that name, Swami Maharaj. Sometimes they refer to me as Puri Maharaj. So that year, we stayed there for 3 months, then Vrindavan for 3 months, and somewhere else for another 3 months. Thus always traveling to different places. All the time, my main teacher was Srila Guru Maharaj, and wherever we went, Srila Guru Maharaj would always engage further teacher for me. In Vrindavan, my teacher was Vishwambar Babaji Maharaj. He was a very good Babaji. I cannot believe how good he was. 20 years later, I happened to be in Mathur and heard that he was still alive, so I went to see him. And Babaji Maharaj, after seeing me, gave full dandavas to me. What more can I say? I was so surprised and astonished when I saw that great, great Babaji. Everyone respected him as a highly qualified Pandit Babaji. I had given Brahmacharya Dandavas to him through courtesy, but he gave full Dandavas to me in return, to which I was surprised and said to him, "Babaji, I am your student. You are my master. Why have you done this? I feel it an offense to take such respect from you." Babaji Maharaj replied, "Hey, Baba. Seeing you, I am feeling that it is Mahaprabhu in front of me, and I pay dandavats to Mahaprabhu. You may be my student, but seeing you brought such remembrance to me of Mahaprabhu that I could offer nothing less. It was not to make offense to you. I have seen how humble and tolerant all the people are in Vrindavan. They tolerate so much. But this Babaji had an exceptionally renounced mentality. Even though he was a Sahaja Babaji, my feeling was to give him dandavats. At that moment, the customary etiquette had been temporarily lifted. Anyhow, we are followers of Srila Saraswati Thakur. That Babaji's path was a little different, no doubt, but I did not know how qualified he was, so I must pay dandavats to him. In this way, I gave respect to that Babaji, but I was very much surprised to see his behavior. He was my teacher, and he recognized me as his boy student from 20 years before. Bound by affection. As time went by, Srila Guru Maharaj gave more and more affection to me. Actually, I was bound by his affection, not at first by Krishna consciousness. It was only his affection and attention to me that gave me the super opportunity to stay in this line of Krishna consciousness. Previously, I knew so many things about Krishna, Mahaprabhu, Nityananda Prabhu, and Panchatattva because I was born in a Brahmin Vaishnava family where such discussions were always taking place. I had some good background, but that was not the cause of my staying at the mud. The cause was the affection of my Guru Maharaj. After entering into the Krishna consciousness environment, it was Srila Guru Maharaj who gave me inspiration, and since then it has always grown, not decreased. I also received much help too from his god brothers. They were very nice, and they always gave me some substantial food of the Krishna conception. Through that, I had the opportunity not to criticize or abuse anyone. Today, I see so much criticism and abuse of others, but Srila Guru Maharaj always praised other Vaishnavas and never criticized. For our protection and guidance, but sometimes give information about them, but in a very honorable way. So the chance for me to make offense to the Vaishnavas was very much reduced. I received so much help from his god brothers and god sisters, and from time to time, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur's sister would also come to meet Srila Guru Maharaj, and she would also give her blessings. It was very helpful for me that the merciful glance of so many gentlemen and lady Vaishnavas came to me from the very beginning of my life under the lotus feet of Srila Guru Maharaj here at Sri Chaitanya Saraswati Mother. Jai Srila Govinda Maharaj, Bhakti Siddhanta Govinda Maharaj, Ghi Jai. Now, you have a chance to hear something about who is Govinda Maharaj and his past life. This is only a little of a lot of nectar is there in his life. And it's also coming from the line of the Nityananda Ghosh, that is in the family of Nityananda Prabhu. Coming down in that line. Would anyone like to ask any question or give any comments? Some more nectar about Govinda Maharaj?
Maharaj, how one should, you know, celebrate one Acharya's appearance day? Like, what should be, you know, his, you know, what duty on that day? But how should he approach that day?
That would make some special preparations for Gurudev. Prasadam preparations, make a nice flower decorations and a beautiful garland, mala, pushpa mala, and then some words should be said of praise of Gurudev, and then offering some arti with the what do they call that? Pushpanjali or arti, offering flowers. Everyone can offer a flower at the lotus feet of Gurudev. And speaking about his glories, everyone can present something that they know about Gurudev and say something in praise or glorification of him. And then chanting, having kirtan. Chanting Hare Krishna and some prayers and worship, remembrance of Guru. Like that. Have you ever been to a Vyas Puja ceremony?
I attended a Vyas Puja ceremony of Guru Maharaj.
Yes. So they have done probably all those different things, right?
Yes, Maharaj.
Yeah. So basically like that. That's what we've done it with Prabhupada and other Vaishnavacharyas. Srila Maharaj once took the devotees in the first time. He took the devotees to Sri Chaitanya Saraswat Math because he wanted to teach them how Guru was to be worshipped, and he took them there on the Vyas Puja day of Srila Maharaj, just to show them how Guru Dev is properly worshipped, because he did not want to show them about his own worship. So he took them to see Srila Maharaj's worship. And by seeing that, they also did the same thing with Prabhupada. However, they made one change, and Prabhupada never said anything about that. But anyhow, in the general Vaishnav tradition, Gurudev was only given this Vyas Puja on one day out of the year, on his appearance day. But then the devotees were doing that every day with Srila Prabhupada. They had every day like a Vyas Puja. not exactly the tradition. But Prabhupada somehow never told them to stop that. Anyhow, so we do that on one day, on the day of the appearance only. The other days we just try to serve Gurudev. Follow his instructions, carry out his wishes, and act for his pleasure. And all auspiciousness will come to one's life. Any other?
Maharaj, what are the kirtan generally sing on that day, Maharaj? Kirtan generally?
Well, I know in ISKCON they sing samsara every day. But in the mat, Chaitanya Saraswat mat, they don't want to sing that song because it's too high. It contains very intimate words about the relation of Gurudev to Radha and Krishna. So they generally don't sing that for the mass of devotees.
Maharaj, generally they sing Gurudev Krupa Bindu Diya.
That's okay. Some of the songs of Narottam Das Thakur would be nice. All right. So did you have any celebration at Tirupati?
No, Maharaj, today I could not, Maharaj, any celebration. Just I offered a little prayer.
Okay.
Nice.
And what about our saffron color? Any day you have chosen for that?
I have fasted today, Maharaj, up to 12 o'clock.
Yes.
And not much celebration.
All right. But you are going to become wear Brahmachari clothing?
No, not yet.
Not yet.
Not yet.
All right.
I shall wear Maharaj.
Huh? Want to wait?
I shall color and wear. I shall color Maharaj.
Oh, you still have to color, okay. Wednesday is Saraswati Thakur's appearance day. The founder of this whole modern movement, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, is also a good day for celebrating that occasion. If you like.
Okay, Maharaj, I shall try that day, Maharaj.
All right. When you put the dye for the clothing, you have to add salt. Make sure you put enough salt in the water, otherwise this color won't stay. Take white cloth, orange dye, and then also the salt has to be added. And then that is added together, and then the dye will stick. And then you wash it out with cold water.
Okay, Maharaj. It should be added in hot water, Maharaj.
Yes, make it in hot water. But then when it's all finished, then you can wash it out in cold water.
Okay, Maharaj.
And then dry.
Okay, Maharaj.
All right. Any other questions, comments? Rajagopal, you're in Hyderabad?
Hello,
Can you?
hello, Maharaj. Can you hear me, Maharaj?
Dhanyavaad. I can hear you. Dhanyavaad, Prabhu. I'm very happy you could join us today.
Please accept my humble obeisances and dear lotus feet, Prabhu.
My humble Dhanyavaad to you, Prabhu. Very
Yes,
nice. So you are in Hyderabad.
I'm in Hyderabad. I'm in
Hyderabad.
Hyderabad.
Okay. Do you have some association there?
Yes, some disciples of Sri Bhaskar Rup Damodar Maharaj are there here.
Okay.
Every 3 days, I will have some association with them.
Okay.
That's
Very good. You attend the ISKCON temple there in
yeah,
Hyderabad?
here in Hyderabad and Secunderabad also, there twin cities there, Hyderabad and
Okay.
Secunderabad.
Yes,
There are
yes.
two temples here.
Right. Okay. Yes, they were having some trouble at the Secunderabad temple. They wanted to, the
Yeah.
government wanted to take it down, huh?
Yeah, they want to have a flyover above the
Yes,
temple.
yes. They
So
have
we
avoided that.
many devotees have went to protest that
Protest, yes.
it is a very success.
Yes, very good. All right.
Have you came to Hyderabad anytime,
Yes,
Maharaj?
yes. Many years ago I was there. Probably 1970, 78 or 79, something like that, I came there. We were doing some traveling in the south of India. And we went to Hyderabad and Tirupati and different places in the south. Very nice, very happy time traveling to those different holy places in South India, like Mahaprabhu
Narasimha Swami temples are very high. Many number of temples are there here.
Many times, yes.
Narasimha. In only Andhra Pradesh there are many, some above 100 are there. Above 50, above 60 are there.
So you're well protected. Not
Because previously many demons are there in here.
lot of demons, so you need a lot of Vishwanga deities to protect against all those dacoits.
Susie appeared here
Not
frequently.
frequently. They need to put some in Bombay. They need Vishwangadeva in Bombay and Calcutta.
Yes, Maharaj.
Many metro.
All right.
This is more possible if the government or the Prime Minister, Chief Minister, the government officials, they are devotees, then only they can.
That's true.
Otherwise.
They're secularists.
What's that?
They're
Secularists?
secularists.
I see.
Secularists. That's a new global religion.
Just like Prithvi Maharaj, anyone of us must come as a minister in India. Just like Prithvi Maharaj, king of the earth.
So what do you do? What kind of work do you do? Are you
I'm
full-time
working here as
devotee?
no, Maharaj. Here I'm working as a software engineer in a small company
Oh, I see.
in
Okay.
Secunderabad.
Secunderabad, okay.
Secunderabad.
You ever get a chance to go to Navadvip, Mayapur?
No, Maharaj, I didn't get any chance. But I will go the next
Yes.
year, I'm planning.
Yes. Once a year, try to make pilgrimage to
Okay,
Navadvip
Maharaj.
and Mayapur and to Vrinda or to Vrindavan.
I
Spend.
went to Vrindavan 2 times, Maharaj. Three
Okay.
times.
Okay. Yes. Also visit Mahaprabhu's birthplace, Mayapur. and the different places of his pastimes in Navadvip.
Mm.
And you can also visit there. There's also a very auspicious place to visit.
Mm.
And once a year, we are told that it will help our devotional service, a devotional spirit to develop. We can develop our devotional spirit more intensely through visiting the holy places. All of us all should try to take advantage of that. If you want to develop your devotion, then visiting the holy places at least once a year, making pilgrimage, that is part of the devotional process, devotional practice. Chanting the holy names, worshipping Tulsi, worshipping the deity, visiting the holy places, reading the Bhagavatam. These processes will help to cultivate our devotional aptitude to the highest degree. Five things Rupa Goswami has given us. All right. So I think the next time we will again continue with the reading of the subjective evolution of consciousness, the book by Srila Sridhar Maharaj that we've been reading. Next time, I think we left off on page 80 or something like that. So because of the festival today, we have postponed that reading until next week. But then we will continue from there where we left off previous week. Huh? Yes?
Maharaj?
Yes?
Small question, Maharaj.
Yes, Prabhu.
Maharaj, once you said that everything is conscious, right, Maharaj?
It's all floating on the ocean of consciousness, yes.
Yes, Maharaj. So I was just wondering, so let's say the living being's consciousness is the symptom of the soul.
Yes.
So what would be the symptom of other consciousness which are not living beings, Maharaj? What would be the source of their consciousness?
Yes, all living entities have a soul.
Yes, Maharaj, all living entities have a soul. Let's say, but we said that everything is conscious, right? Like let's say this table, right? Table or this molecule, in that case, conscious.
Yes.
So where does that consciousness come from? Who is this? What is the source of that consciousness?
No. How does the table get there? We have to think. How is the table produced? Without the consciousness, there would be no table, isn't it? Table is what's called manufactured, is an artifact. It is not a product of nature. It is a product of manufacturing, right? A man. Man makes that. So it's a product of consciousness. It may not be conscious itself, but it's a product of consciousness, and therefore it has its origin in consciousness, in intelligence, right? Even the rock is coming from the earth, and the earth is a Bhumidev. So the rock also has its origin in consciousness. So what has its origin in consciousness, has its foundation in consciousness, is also consciousness, but in a covered way. So the table, if it comes from wood, came from a tree which was conscious, had a consciousness soul in there. Right? So, just like if we say the table is made up of electrons and atoms, then we understand the table is atomic by nature. But if we understand that the table is coming from the tree, then the consciousness is there, producing it, and the man, the human being, his consciousness is making the form of the table, and is also producing the shape. So the whole table has its origin or basis within consciousness. And therefore, in that sense, we can say it is conscious. It's become the conscious substance. It is not merely something exterior to consciousness. But it must have its origin within its foundation on consciousness, or within consciousness. Is that reasonable?
Yes, Maharaj, very much clear. Thanks a lot, Maharaj.
Very reasonable. Like that. Even the rock is coming from Bhumi Dev. So the consciousness is the source of that rock. Whatever is there in nature, it has a source. We have to say, who is nature? Nature means who's nature. Is we have to consider who is it that we are talking about when we say nature. Nature. And then all these different Bhumi Dev and all the other demigods are coming from Krishna, so therefore Krishna is the ultimate source of them. Govindamari Purusham. Aham Sarvasya Pavavo. Krishna says, I am the source of everything, so everything is ultimately coming from him. And in that way also we can understand that everything has a foundation in consciousness. But as its foundation in consciousness, then must be conscious of same conscious substance. A little bit modified, that's all. God can commit suicide. Avadhoot Prabhu asked sent the question, can God commit suicide? If he can't, he's not all powerful. If he can, there is nothing. Nothing can exist. Actually, suicide means what? Can he give up his own life? We have Jesus Christ. Jesus Christ is said to be God. Who is giving up his own life for the salvation of the human society. Is God coming to give up his own life for the salvation of the human society, for the forgiveness of their sins, for taking the sins of the others on himself, then going through so much suffering and death, not only death, but also suffering. He is suffering and he's dying, and then, but then he can also come back to life again. He came after 3 days, he came, he rose again. Came from the dead, came back to life again. So death is not so significant for God. For us, it's a big thing. But even then, we know that we don't die. Actually, at every minute, we are dying. At the same time, every minute, we are dying. I explained this several times before. In order to live, we have to die. The body, every cell of the body is living and dying at the same time. That's called metabolism. Metabolism involves two processes. One is called anabolism. Another one is called catabolism. Anabolism means that the body is building itself up, and catabolism means it's tearing itself down. Now the cell is building itself up. It has a birth, it has some sustenance, and it has a destruction. Every cell in the body. So life is just like that. We are born, we live for some time, and then it dies. But then it doesn't simply remain dead. Right? Another life comes. So the process is going on eternally like that, cyclically. Birth and death, birth and death. And the real process, therefore, is something different from both birth and death. Is higher than either birth or death. Birth or death is a material conception. Well, actually, A higher conception is that there is change, movement. There is movement. The absolute truth is living. Living means it doesn't just sit there like a stone. The absolute truth is alive. And alive, that there is this kind of process going on of generating and degenerating, of sustaining. All these things are there. And we call that Brahma, Vishnu, Shiva. They are at the basis of the whole thing. Brahma, Vishnu, and Shiva. Brahma is creating, Shiva is destroying, and Vishnu is maintaining. These things make up what we call the reality. Death is not like that. And anything, and there it is also, therefore it is there in God. That is his process of doing things. That is his process of life. What we call death. Life and death, that is an external thing. The real process is the living God. He has his own life. Absolute truth has his own life. And that life is not a static thing. It's ecstatic. It's always moving and changing. And therefore ever fresh. If a thing doesn't move, it becomes rotten, spoiled. Decays. The body, there's no life in the body, it decays. That becomes something horrible, smelly. But God is ever fresh, Navayovana. That means he's constantly regenerating himself. No problem. Regenerating means he can have degeneration and regeneration, both are going on. Then he doesn't become stale. It's not that God is a stone and always remains in one thing. No, he's a living person. Dynamic. So the absolute truth is dynamic and not going to be understood in a static way. It has to be understood in a dynamic way. Dynamic. That is God. Living God. Not a dead conception of our brain. Then, Raja Gopal, many NASA scientists are telling that we reach moon. No human can reach it according to Bhagavatam. We can't reach Chandraloka in this human form. Really, where they are going, actually. Prabhupada told that to go to the moon, you must be able to enter into the moon, the actual moon, the atmosphere of the moon, which is ethereal. And there, the Chandradev is living. And there is a society there of the servants of Chandradev. Now, so did they go to the moon if they didn't see those things? Just think like that, if we have the other example, another example that we can understand. If someone from another planet comes to the Earth, and let's say they land in the Sahara Desert, and they go back to their planet, and they tell, oh, we went to that Earth planet and there was only sand. We only found some dry sand there. And nothing is there. Only dry sand. Can we say they have actually visited the Earth?
Well, actually they visited the Earth.
They visited the Earth? Well, they only see the sand. They go back and report, oh yes, we went there and we found only sand. We went for miles and miles. All there was only sand. Maybe some sense you can say they came to the Earth, but really, they didn't come to the Earth. They don't know anything about the Earth, what's going on here for real, because there's much more than sand here. Something like that. So we went to the moon and found only rocks. That is not the moon. That is not what we mean by the moon. That is not what the Vedas mean by the moon. When the Vedas talk about the moon, they have a much wider conception. And that conception they do not like. just like when we talk of the earth, we don't just mean the Sahara Desert. That's a very insignificant part of what we mean by the earth, according to our own understanding. So I would say it's something like that. They can't see the higher dimensions that the moon is actually consists of. They only go with their present consciousness to there. And in order to go to the moon, actually, you have to change your consciousness, come to the higher awareness, and then you will see those things that are going on there, but only with a higher consciousness. So real travel to another planet is by conscious development, not by mechanical transportation. Just like going to Krishnaloka, you can't get there by some spaceship. Only by conscious transformation of the heart, you can go into that world. So from the highest plane to the lowest, it really requires a transformation of consciousness. And just like you say, even this Earth planet that we are experiencing, that's a particular form of consciousness that we have developed, that we see it in a certain way. Saints see the world in a different way than we do. The residents of Vrindavan can see Krishna's pastimes, or the residents of Navadvip can see Krishna's pastimes, Mahaprabhu's pastimes, going on daily. Or spiritually advanced, they can experience Krishna's pastimes going on all the time, or Mahaprabhu's pastimes. But an ordinary person goes there, they can't see that. They can't feel that. One time, Srila Maharaj told us that one devotee came to Navadvip, and all he could see was that some dogs had made a lot of poop, dog stool along the side of the road. He was looking at that, and Guru Maharaj told him, you have come here to see dog stool. That's all you could see. Other devotees are going there, they don't even notice that. So what your consciousness is, that's what you'll see. Even on this world or on any other world. Lord Chandra, your microphone is making a lot of noise, I think. Yes, now it's better. Thank you. Okay, Braja Gopal, thank you. I'm happy that you understand that. Hare Krishna. Jai Govinda Nandini. Thank you very much for coming, for listening so nicely. Nandavats, Sushen Prabhu, you're not there. I don't see you online. Anyhow, so we'll try to meet again. Kavya Karti, my Dandavats, Dandavat Pranam, see you also. Hope to see you next week. Dandavat Pranam to all. Jai Shri Prabhupada.